In the run-up to the 2009 general elections, Sharad Pawar once made a statement in Odisha that indicated that he could go with anybody after the elections, not necessarily stay with UPA. So I asked late Pranab Mukherjee then, who I was interviewing for my show for NDTV, Walk the Talk, that why Sharad Pawar giving mixed signals? He said Sharad Pawar always gives mixed signals. And he was so right, but only when it comes to domestic politics. Because domestic politics is about power games. And Sharad Pawar does give mixed signals. But when he moves out of the domestic politics and he speaks on a larger plane, then he talks with clarity. That's why I particularly take note of his saying that China is trying to encircle India. So that is correct, but that is only a half truth. The full truth would be that China is not trying to encircle India. China actually is succeeding in encircling India. So you want to be nice, you can say, okay, it's an uneasy embrace, but no, I think it's a tight, unwelcome chokehold, which is now getting tighter. That is the reality of India-China relations right now. And that's what this week's National Interest is talking about. Particularly after we heard what Sir Sangh Chalak Mohan Bhagwat said in his Dashera speech, and also things that have been happening on the ground and in our region and across the world right now, signals coming out of Beijing too. So as we end this festive week, Chinese propaganda machine is turning out video after video. These are short videos, all taken from the Galwan clash of 15 June last year, when we all know that they had taken 10 Indian soldiers captive. Some of them had minor injuries. They were taken captive in that melee. So they are walking them out. They made videos. These are obvious propaganda videos. And they are making these public. And in fact, their usual suspect handles, because very few people can use Twitter in China. Twitter is banned in China. Only Chinese state officials or propaganda people use Twitter. So they've been putting out this video saying, hey, who has put this video out? Who has produced this video? Is this authentic? That is to troll India, and that is also to run a kind of warfare with India. And the Chinese are doing it. They are good at doing this. They've done it for a long time. Again, this is topped by warlike commentary in Global Times and other Chinese weapons of psychological mass destruction. And they are saying stuff like, see, India does not have a chance. India should make peace with China. India cannot have the borders it wishes. On top of it, Chinese have also protested Venkaiah Naidu's visit to Arunachal Pradesh. Now, there is nothing new about Chinese protesting the visit of Indian VVIPs to Arunachal Pradesh, but just the vehemence of the language and the offensiveness of the words used in this case is a little bit unusual. So this is how China is now not just encircling India, but also ratcheting up the pressure. Because this is ratcheting up of pressure is maneuvering. Encirclement comes in the form of tying up with Pakistan, tightening the relationship with Pakistan, reaching out to Sri Lanka. They now own the port of Hambantota, the hometown of the Rajapakshas. Once again, trying to break India's, breach India's inroads into Bangladesh, trying to regain control in Nepal, which they've lost a little bit after Oli's government left in Nepali Congress. In a way, in a coalition, came into power, and now Afghanistan with the Taliban there. Obviously, the Taliban are their new allies, which has actually got Tajikistan a little bit uneasy about its own relationship with China at this point of time, because Tajikistan does not like the Taliban. There is also an intensifying Chinese relationship with Iran, Turkey, and some Central Asian republics. So we are looking at India's immediate vicinity, and then the next tier, next circle around India's immediate vicinity. China is reaching out to both these tiers and tightening the chokehold on India. There is no doubt about that. The latest provocation, in fact, as we write this column, is the breathless Chinese release on Chinese state media, which our young columnist Adil Brar, who's a China domain specialist, he pointed out, he knows the language very well, the Chinese language. This says that China and Bhutan have signed a new border agreement whereby they've decided to settle their border peacefully and with mutual understanding. And these Chinese releases then go on to say, they go on to rub it in by saying that the Bhutanese should realize that letting India interfere in the earlier Doklam issue, which was between Bhutan and China, has not been good for Bhutan. So once again, the effort is to pull Bhutan away from India. Of course, MEA has said that they are aware of what has happened. The Bhutanese have kept India posted. But the fact is, now the Chinese are engaging with every neighbor of ours and every country next to our neighbors. So this is done, being done in a very systematic manner. In this region, within the region and beyond, the Chinese are trying to tell every country who's the boss in this neighborhood. Who's the dada of the mohalla, or I think Kolkata, they say Pada Mastan or something like that. In eastern Ladakh, the Chinese came prepared this time with hardened position for the 13th Corps Commanders Conference. They were no longer conciliatory as they had been in the past. After the disengagement at Hot Springs took place, it looked like Gogra was just a work in progress and Gogra will happen this time. But this time the Chinese hardened their position and made it sound like they were not going to pull back from anywhere and India should take what is available to it and not expect any changes. And certainly expectation that status quo as of pre-April 2020 will be restored was unrealistic. In fact, a lot of Chinese commentary in Chinese state media after this failed meeting even said that. So basically the message from the Chinese was, take what you have, take it, or you won't even have it, right? That is not a message that India had heard even since 15th of June last year. So this was definitely a change of position by China. And all this is being done to the accompaniment of commentary in this Chinese state media saying that India is erring gravely by counting on the Americans. Americans can do nothing. The Quad is a bad idea. It's never going to work. So India, quote unquote, should not choose war, because if it does, then again, quote unquote, it is bound to lose. So this is full on psychological warfare that's been unleashed. So as psychological warfare goes, they are being quite transparent. Why and what is it that they want to achieve is the question. So RSS Chief Mohan Bhagwat in his Dashera address was quite right, talking about a Pakistan, China, Turkey, Taliban nexus. That's a reality because there is a convergence of interests there. It is just that while his diagnosis was right, the prescription that he suggested for treating this problem wasn't. And in conclusion, we will argue why we think so. Why we think that while his diagnosis is correct, the treatment he suggests or the prescription that he writes is wrong or is flawed. Now, again, look at India's allies and adversaries. Allies, Russia. Given India's complex relationship and continued military dependence on Russia, at least for another decade, it's not going to change, right? Because a lot of our aircraft, a lot of our tanks, a lot of our missiles are going to be of Russian origin, at least for the next 10, 15 years. Some of our naval vessels. New Delhi, that's the reason New Delhi tends not to talk much about the concerns emerging from there. But see the statement that Vladimir Putin just made about China. He's almost sounding like a fanboy of Xi Jinping. He even said that the Chinese don't even have to use any force at all to absorb Taiwan. He said China has now become so powerful that it's inevitable that they will peacefully absorb Taiwan into the mainland. And in fact, he's gone on to say that China is now a very big military power and the biggest economic power in the world on PPP, purchasing power parity basis, bigger in purchasing power parity in their GDP than America. Never mind the fact that Chinese population is four times America's population. But for Vladimir Putin to talk like that is not something that India wants to hear. All this makes the strategic picture really dire for Modi government in their eighth year. The big opening gambit that Narendra Modi made in 2014, reaching out to China, trying for a grand deal or a grand bargain, that has failed. Diplomatically, that's been his biggest miscalculation. Simply because China never accepted India as an equal. You can have these grand bargains with another country if it considers you to be their equal, which Xi Jinping did not. In fact, it is now acting, China is now acting as if to remind India that the power gap between the two, the gap between GNP or gross national power, has now increased furthermore. On the surface, the strategic balance sheet looks very heavily loaded in favor of China. It may or may not have taken any territory in Ladakh, but the fact is, undeniable fact is, it is denying Indian patrols access to quite large chunks of territory where they used to go or they could go in the past. That's the reality. It has also brought the other dormant borders to life. For example, the central sector along Uttarakhand. For a long time, you never thought there was trouble there, but they have lit up that sector a little bit in Barahoti Plains. Remember, that border is the closest point to India's heartland. That is New Delhi and the Hindi heartland. That is the closest point. And the Chinese came there and they have now raised tension levels there. After that, we saw this trouble in Tawang when one of their patrols came into an area which we consider our own, and they were stopped by our patrol, and there were some unpleasant exchanges there, or some sort of fraught exchanges there. So they have now brought back to life dormant sectors, central sector as well as the Arunachal sector. And again, they did something in Subansiri, which is the eastern side of the Arunachal sector. So their intentions are now well known. They think that they have the ability to create trouble anywhere, make you rush your troops there, and also position them permanently because you are permanently defensive. Whereas they can decide, they can sit in depth, and they can decide as and when to come and make mischief. So they are now stretching out India's armed forces and also India's resources along a very large frontier. That is a tactics. And despite all this, as I had explained to you in my Cut the Clutter episode 857, their trade surplus with India has only increased for all the Aatmanirbhar effort that India has made. I know these things take time. This year, the Chinese will enjoy their highest ever trade surplus in India, it looks like, because the total trade surplus that they had over 2020, they've already topped that in the first three quarters, the 9 months of this calendar year. There are three more months left. So if you look at all this, you will think that the Chinese are doing very well. Where is the problem? But then on this balance sheet, look at the other side. Look at the costs, look at the losses, and look at the liabilities, because that's also important. Now, whatever the Chinese may have achieved in Eastern Ladakh, I don't know whether they've taken any territory or not. Their ability to repeat the first mover advantage now is gone in every place, or if at all, it's grossly limited now. Because if the PLA is there, then Indian armed forces are also now arrayed everywhere in full deployment. Just as the PLA patrol found out in Tawang just earlier this week. This, it costs money and stress to the Indian armed forces to be deployed like this, but Indian armed forces are ready to do that. Every rude nudge from the Chinese leaders also pushes India closer to the US. That is not something that's in China's larger interest, and they always have been insecure about that. But see, for 15 years, India had sat on that agreement called LEMOA, Logistics Exchange Memorandum of Agreement, with America, because nobody wanted to be seen taking India so close to the US. But this nudge from the Chinese, and that happened. In fact, C. Rajamohan, who I consider to be India's foremost strategic thinker, he pointed out to me, when I called him to chat about this argument, he pointed out to me that after the LEMOA with the US, India signed a similar LEMOA agreement with the French as well, which most of India's defense press did not even take notice of. It was seen to be such a normal thing. So what have the Chinese done? What Xi Jinping has done is, Xi Jinping has cured Indian defense establishment, strategic establishment, civil services, even the commentariat of their chronic anti-Americanism. So 70 years of anti-Americanism ossified in our minds has now been scraped away by the Chinese. So thank you, Xi Jinping, you opened our eyes. And that has now happened. The figures on trade just now look ugly for India, but change is happening there. I'm not sure Aatmanirbharta will work or not. We'll see how this unfolds. But the fact is that in large sectors of India's economy, that is high-tech sectors, telecom, the Chinese are now completely out. Everybody knows it. Chinese are also more or less out of the 5G business anywhere in the Western world and anywhere in the big democratic world, because there is fear of the Chinese. So they are paying a price for their dadagiri. So whatever little they might have taken in Ladakh or might have denied India in Ladakh, they are already paying a heavy price for it. In fact, in India already, two Indian conglomerates, that is the Tatas and Reliance, are both talking about developing their own 5G. Of course, they'll go out and get partners of their own, but you can be sure that those partners will not be Chinese. So that is the damage that Chinese have inflicted on themselves. That is the price they are paying for their adventurism. This price is not visible in terms of military casualties or territorial losses, but they will end up sacrificing one of their biggest markets eventually. It is not happening this year, as we know. It may not happen next year, but in the course of time, it will happen. Because right now, there is supply chain dependence. But when a country needs to diversify, the country will diversify, and that process has started. So how does the picture at the same time look for Xi Jinping? His economy is right now in a crisis, mainly because of the big debt overhang. He's got massive debt in his economy. And it is at this time, when his debt issues coming unstuck, that he is also going after large sunrise sectors of his economy. The high-tech companies, for example, the education, the edutech sector, social media. He is going after all of them, and he is also going after his top entrepreneurs who became global stars. Because in Xi Jinping's China, there can be only one star, namely Xi Jinping. So all of that is extracting a price, because to consolidate his own totalitarian power, he has gone after everything that has given China this big, massive economic strength. Within our immediate neighborhood, his critical ally, his most critical ally, Pakistan, is in its worst situation, I would say, in almost three decades. I know that in the short term, we think, oh, the Pakistanis won in Afghanistan, they can give us trouble, their allies Taliban are there in Afghanistan. But Taliban are not such reliable allies. They are also not such consistent allies. Already, you've seen that Pakistan International Airlines has suspended flying to Kabul because of the trouble they are having with the Taliban. Negotiations are happening. Flights will resume. But the fact is, the Taliban's victory is now beginning to look like an albatross around Pakistan's neck. Can Pakistan, in this situation, start trouble with India? Look at the state of Pakistan's economy. Pakistan's rupee has gone to some 175 to a dollar, right? Terrible. Pakistan has inflation galloping. It has shortages. And remember, just a little point of fact, Pakistan's GDP now, the total country's GDP today, is, if anything, a little bit smaller than the GSDP of our state of Tamil Nadu. So Pakistan is not in a position to start pangas with India right now. So it also loses any hope of restoring its relationship with the US. Already, Wendy Sherman, the US Deputy Secretary of State, on her visit to the subcontinent, has made statements that warn Pakistan that they should not take it for granted that the US-Pakistan relationship will be back to normal. So Pakistan can no longer count on American help now to bail them out in IMF, World Bank, etc. And the Pakistanis also know that Chinese never give you any money for love or for loyalty. They give you money for profit and on a steep rate of interest. So the Pakistanis know their limitations. Right now, can they give India trouble taking advantage of the pressure the Chinese have put us under? Well, at this point, they can't even appoint their ISI chief. Now, the Chinese encirclement of India is getting tighter. The RSS chief was right in identifying the threat or diagnosing the threat. But his solution, strengthening the security at the borders, is flawed. And I'll tell you why. If he goes back to the history he has read and history that he believes in, he also knows that for 1,000 years in India, the defender has always lost, no matter how high his citadel, his fort, no matter how formidable his fort. The defender has always lost. Also, there is no point going out dying fighting, because you know you might die a hero's death, but despite your bravery you lose. So what is the point? The only way the defender, when faced with an unequal threat, with a much stronger, much larger threat, the only way defender succeeds is by setting up alliances. In a changing world, allies are available, but you need time and patience for doing that. You also need to give your allies some space. That is why you don't buy yourself that kind of time by lighting fires in your own walled city that had been put out earlier. Like this whole talk of a national register of citizens. We thought that with Narendra Modi's speech in Ramlila Maidan in Delhi, that story was over and nobody has talked of a national NRC. Now, the moment you talk about that, you are lighting a fire that has been put out in your own country. You can't call Hindus and Muslims of India one people or the same people one day and start worrying the next day about whose numbers are rising faster, if at all they are rising faster. So we understand the electoral compulsions of political parties, the desperate need for BJP to get at least 50% of the Hindus to vote for them in the state of Uttar Pradesh in a few months, for them to retain that state. For that, you need polarization, which means put your own Muslim compatriots on the quote-unquote other side. This is how your domestic politics runs contrary to your national strategic interest. India can fight China despite its 5 times GDP, but not with a divided house.